Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the BC. It is Saturday, the 10th of May, Anno Domini 2014. And you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose. Nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. But before we do that, let me remind you that we are just one day away from Mother's Day. You still have time to not be the jerk.
Except now you have to pay for Sunday delivery, which is even more expensive.
Or you pick it up and this afternoon and hide it in somewhere, and then you're on your way. All right. Before we get to the phones, let's talk about the number one news item. Antivirus is dead, according to the company that invented it. Symantec is amending its 25-year-old anti-malware product because antivirus software alone doesn't work.
Duh.
Yeah. We don't think of antivirus as a moneymaker in any way, Symantec Senior Vice President for Information Security said. Companies spend billions of dollars on cybersecurity systems only to have their system hacked. I'm looking at you, Target. Breaches can cost organizations tens of millions of dollars, and in the case of Target, the top executive, his job. More than ever, businesses and individuals need cybersecurity protection, but the whole concept of detecting what is bad is a broken concept, said Ted Schlein, a security-focused investment partner at Kleiner Perkins Caulfield and Byers. But if not antivirus software, then what? Three former National Security Agency officers think they've created part of the solution with Area 1 security. Just 50 more to go. Unlike Symantec's soon-to-be-defunct software, Area 1 security, which Monday announced a $2.5 million round of funding, detects cyber attacks in earlier phases. Most people in the security industry focus on malware, CEO Oren Falkowitz said. But at that phase in an attack, it's already too late. It can often take days, months, or years from when an employee clicks a malicious link in a phishing scam to when that virus turns into malware. In that period between when you would click the bad link and when it would be discovered, there is tremendous amounts of data and intellectual property lost, added at Falkowitz. The average time it takes to resolve an attack is 32 days, costing an average of $32,469 per day. Area 1 hopes to catch viruses way before then. What we try to do is provide insights about what users are doing on the web that would lead to clicking on the links and bringing malicious things into your network. Companies also focusing on accurate alerts. One thing that has plagued companies in this space before is throwing lots of flags around. It has reduced confidence. Target, for example, missed multiple warnings about its Epic hack because it assumed they were false positives. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Symantec says antivirus is dead. And your choices are, it's certainly been working for me, great, now what? And I don't bother with that stuff anyways. So far, we've got 28 votes, and it's certainly been working for me, followed sadly by I don't bother with that stuff anyways. And, of course, I know you'll have more to say because this is an interesting topic. You can go to our forums, go down the left to down the right-hand side of the page to Fascinating Stuff. And the first link is the forums under the forum on May 10th, 10 May 14th. Symantec says antivirus is dead. And, of course, give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415.
Well, that's what I've been saying for quite a while. I mean, we're seeing fewer viruses and more malware and spyware because that's where they can get money out of it.
It used to be just
bottom line, it's all about the money. And all viruses did was, yeah, create havoc. Yeah, used to that be, was the fun thing in the day.
It used to be vandalism. You know, you spray paint your name on the website. And we're long past that.
Yeah, and now that they found out, oh, well, if I can, you know, say, just do a simple little script that goes into your computer and steals your email list. And I collect that. And then I turn around to all these spammers and sell them, oh, maybe 250,000 names for $20. Now I'm making money.
Yep.
And all it cost me was this little program to go out there and on your computer, get in there and steal stuff. Or, like we've seen for quite a few years now, the scam of, oh, your machine is infested with all this malware and spyware and everything else, and you got to pay $79.95 and we'll get rid of it.
Well, then
they're the ones that put it on there.
What was that other one? CryptoLocker, that actually encrypted your data. And really held it for ransom.
Right.
And and we're surprised we don't see more stuff like that. But, well, no, because most of the average virus writers are not that good at coding, and it's all script kiddies. But something like CryptoLocker, which had, you know, perfectly implemented encryption algorithm and security to kill all your files, that was probably written by, you know, was it state sponsored? Is that the word they use?
Yeah, state sponsored. Yeah.
So it's all the former KGB officers that are out of a job now that the Soviet Union fell. You know, they're doing something. In fact, Mark Rusinovich's book series he's got, Zero Day and Trojan Horse, are along those lines, where the heroes are a couple of computer analysts who go around cleaning out viruses and finding these Trojan horses and finding the bad guys. In fact, from your story there, $30,000 a day cleaning viruses?
Yeah.
I'm in the wrong job.
You aren't kidding.
I thought that's the job I was in. Yeah. So all you people, the next time you complain about a $200 or $300 virus antivirus bill, so that's the low end. So if $30,000 is the average, what's the high end?
Right, exactly. Remember, half by definition, half the costs are above that.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
All right, to the phones. Here's where we find out whether or not we're plugged in correctly for the recording, the hangout. Our first caller is Dick from Exton, Pennsylvania. Do you realize in the last 3 weeks, the first caller has been from out of town?
PA.
I think that's very exciting. Welcome, Dick. What's your question?
Hey, good morning. I've been using the Chromebook for several months. It's great. I'll never go back to Windows again, except for one thing I have to. I want to set up my printer, and I need to go use my XP computer to set it up for Chromebook. Now, the problem is I have a laptop, an IBM ThinkPad. It's actually XP on it. I turned it on for the first time in about 2 weeks, and it comes up with a blue screen, which comes up with this bad pool caller. Now, I've tried every possible thing. I've tried the safe mode, and I can't get out of this mode. I even went to Google and looked it up, and I can't find any way to get out of this mode. What do I do?
All right, wait a minute. Are these two separate problems? One is your Chromebook.
No, well, there's no problem with the Chromebook. What I want to do is I want to set up the printer on my Chromebook. And to set up the printer, I understand you have to go to the computer that had your printer set up on it and use that. And that's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, some printers have a front panel and you can set it up without needing a computer. But the less expensive, dumber printers, you have to set it up on a computer, for a Windows or Mac computer first. We find the same thing with tablets, where you can't set the printer up on the tablet. But if it is already set up, it will work. So you're getting a bad pool error, blue screen on your XP. That may be a bad hard drive. You could try something like SpinWrite. That's I think $80 for that to scan and repair the hard drive. If you have a good backup or you don't care about the data on the drive, erase and reinstall Windows.
That's the problem. I don't have a copy of Windows. That's the catch.
Yeah. Right, it came with it, and you never made the CD. You can't get into Windows at all, right? It doesn't.
No, I tried every possible way of safe mode and all, and I just can't get into it. I tried it. I went, like I said, to Google and looked up different tricks that people tried. I just can't get into it.
Borrow someone else's computer to set your printer up.
Now, that's the question I have for you. Can I borrow another computer and set up and then give the person their computer back? Once it's set up, I don't need that computer anymore. Is it
a USB printer, a network printer, or a Wi-Fi printer?
It's a USB printer.
Then you must have a computer hosting the print services.
Yeah, at some point, you've got to have a network connection to that printer.
In other words, okay. So in other words, my computer, my XP computer, has to be on all the time if I'm going to use the printer on the Chromebook.
Right.
Right. Now,
another option would be some routers have a USB port on it, and the router shares the printer to the network.
Okay, I believe my router does have a USB port on it. Now, how do I set that up?
You'd have to check the router manual.
It depends on what router you have.
Okay.
But you can also look online for network print servers and see what's available for those. They're, you can get them anywhere from $50 to $300. You probably don't need the $300 one.
Or you buy a new Wi-Fi printer for $100.
Or you buy a new Wi-Fi printer for $100, right.
Okay.
But you can find printer servers.
Yeah, USB, it's a little hardware box. It's got USB on one side and Ethernet on the other side.
I've seen them advertised, yes. Yep.
There you go. Plug that in, and that will let you connect that printer to your network.
Okay, now I don't need the XP computer on at all then after I do that.
Right.
Okay, that sounds like the best way to do it, because I didn't realize that I had to leave my computer on all the time to do that.
Well, so just when you want to print.
That's a better way to do it.
Yeah, it just has to be on when you want to print, so it's easiest just to leave it on.
Yeah. What would make a computer? I mean, I didn't even touch this computer for 2 weeks. Is it normal? Can they just go bad like that?
It was lonely and is spiting you.
I know. Computers can be very temperamental, can't they?
They work fine until they don't.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I will try you. Thanks for your help. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Well, as we can see, we still don't have Hangouts on the, we still don't have the caller on Hangouts, but we did 2 weeks ago.
And you didn't do anything different.
And I'm even using the same cable I used then. I wonder if there's a pot down over there.
Let me check.
I know, please, thank you. How interesting. What we're trying to do is make sure that this thing will actually work on, for the callers as well, so that the Hangouts are kind of useless if you can't hear the callers. If we can't get this to actually work, I will turn off the Hangout until I figure this out. It's not the cable, because it worked 2 weeks ago. It's something somewhere in the board, and I don't know what that is. And none of us do. We don't.
Yeah, no.
We don't have a clue what's
sitting there scratching our heads for,
Getting a level over here now.
Oh, yeah? Well, that's good.
Yeah,
let's
but
see what
that's
happens.
In studio. But that's it depends on we can. If correct me if I'm wrong, Nick. You said in here the studio you're copying it, no problem. It's when we get a caller that the board isn't being fed to that.
We're plugged in. It's plugged into the same system the headphones are, and we can hear the callers through the headphones.
And that's what I don't understand.
Yeah,
I may have to get a Y jack for this.
Right, because then you know the caller's coming through.
Right,
the
ball jack up here. If I have to, I'll go buy a Y jack for that.
You used to have a quarter inch Y that you would carry around.
I think I gave it to you.
I think I borrowed it all the time and gave it back.
Oh, okay.
Sure, likely story.
Back in a previous studio,
I gave it to you.
Didn't have enough headset jacks.
Right.
Yeah,
Do we have somebody waiting on the line?
Yeah.
Well, then we should probably go to them. Who is it?
No.
It's sponsor time.
Okay, it's sponsor time. All right, this is very exciting. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back and stop it. Stop it right now. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we've switched around a couple of cables. We've made a change to the system. Never do two things at once. Always do one thing and figure out if that's your story. And our next caller, which the folks in the Hangout may or may not be able to hear, is Carl from Pottstown, PA. Hi, Carl. What's up?
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Good. And nobody can hear you.
And it's afternoon for us.
What can we do for you?
Too bad nobody else can hear me. I do have a question about your WGMC website, High Speed Link. I recently downgraded my web speed to a little over 3.3 megabits per second download in order to save money. And ever since I did that, whenever I go to the Jazz 90.1 website and I click on the High Speed Link, I get a that is the Listen Now link. I get a message saying Windows Media Player cannot connect to the server. The server name might not be correct. The server might not be available, or your proxy settings may not be correct. However, when I click on the low bandwidth dial-up link for the dial-up network internet, it works fine.
Yeah, the station recently changed their streaming software in the studio here, and I wonder if that made a change to the streaming links on the website.
Yeah, they should have changed it. Now, if you click the low bandwidth link, does that work?
Yeah, that works perfect.
And how about the third one down, click to listen on your smartphone?
No, that I haven't tried yet because I don't have a smartphone.
Well, the first two links are a stream file, a .m3u that Windows Media Player or say iTunes will play. The third one is an MP3 stream, and that will play directly in the browser.
Okay, I just clicked on the third link. It says click here to listen on your smartphone, mm-hmm. and I immediately get a screen that says this page can't be displayed.
Yep. Grease Media Monroe WC. Yeah, so that's got to be a change in the website because we changed the streaming computer.
Mm-hmm.
So Rob will have to take care of that.
So we'll make sure he knows about it. And thank you.
Interesting that one of the three links is working, but the other two aren't.
Well, maybe everything comes off that one now, and it just
yeah, there may not be three separate links anymore.
Right.
On the new stream.
Interesting.
And it's okay that just one of them works because the dial-up internet link, which is the low bandwidth link, it's fine for me to listen to. I don't mind. It's the fidelity is pretty good. But I just wanted to bring it to your attention that the other two don't work.
Yeah, thank you.
Right. Thank you.
Okay.
I think I tested the M3U last week.
Yeah. All right, we're good. Yeah. Thanks.
Yep. All right.
Thanks, Carl. I'm sorry. I was thinking about that. It's interesting. We'll figure it out, but I'm going to switch back the cables now.
Okay.
We'll see.
We'll see
what that does.
I had to turn my recording level way down because I cranked the output level way up over there.
Right. And that may be part of the issue. It's just not. See, now it's gone back to headphone for output. But input doesn't, it doesn't say headphone for input.
Yeah, because it knows you plugged the thing in, so it's assuming you want that to be a headphone.
But it doesn't say input for headphone.
Right.
Soundbite, please
hold. All right, well, let's try it and see what happens. Our next caller is Linda from Greece, New York. Welcome, Linda. What's up?
Hi, how are you guys?
We're good. How are you?
Okay, I got a quick question. On my smartphone, Google has All Access Music, but they want you to use the Google Wallet. I've read some reviews. They're not crazy about it, so I thought I'd ask you guys what you thought of it.
I use it. I haven't had any trouble with it. I don't know what to say. They're all fairly similar, whether you're using somebody else's or Google's, in terms of the ability.
Well, because I want to use the Google All Access Music,
right,
which is $10 a month,
so
said use Google Wallet.
You have to put the money
and
in
I
your
said,
wallet,
okay,
yeah.
But I just want, so Nick, you've been using, you haven't had any problems?
No, I haven't. I don't know if anybody else has. Before you do it, we'll wait and see if anybody else calls in.
I've used it a few times, haven't had any trouble with it.
Right. So we haven't had any issues so far, at least.
Okay.
But it's,
yeah,
it's pretty much,
yeah,
the same as PayPal or the other online payment services. You have to trust that company to not do bad things with your,
yeah,
your money.
Well, they said, put in your credit card or use Google Wallet. And I thought to myself, what is Google Wallet? Let me ask you that. What is that?
Well, it's like any of the other things that are out there, PayPal or somebody else's credit card. You attach your credit card to them, and when somebody pays you, it goes to your credit card. And when you pay somebody through Google Wallet, it comes from your credit card. It's just another way of doing that stuff.
So no matter what I buy on the Play Store or anything, it would come out of Google Wallet.
Right.
And then Google Wallet pulls money off of your credit card.
It's very similar.
Very similar to the iTunes Store as well. And Google has gift cards too, right?
So you can't use those on a monthly subscription.
Right. I remember that before, yeah. Because a lot of people don't like attaching their credit card to an online service like PayPal or Google Wallet or iTunes because of the danger that if someone gets into your account, then they can empty your credit card. So what happens is a lot of people will get gift cards to put on their account, but if Google Wallet doesn't like that.
And I got an email from them that said, I'm sorry, because you know, it's a monthly thing and you may not have the money there all the time using the gift card. I guess that's why they're saying you can't use that.
Same thing
if
with
it's
a
credit
card.
They know they can get it for it from you every month.
Well, unless you connect to a debit card.
Or if you're over your credit balance, then that gets denied too. So there's no difference from their end.
Yeah, so, okay. I was just wondering. I thought I'd wait and ask you guys what you thought of it before I went ahead and did it.
Right. I don't see an issue with it. It's as safe as any other of those things. I mean, people can break into PayPal, they can break into Google Wallet, they can break into any one of those, Stripe or any of those things.
It's usually not breaking into the other end. It's guessing your password or you get an email. Hi, this is Google. We need the password for your wallet, and people give it to them. People get tricked into giving it to them. Yeah.
Yeah. Never give your password to anybody, and make sure your password is. Robust enough, you know, fairly lengthy.
I won't tell you what it is, but I have a capital letter, I have initials, I have numbers, and then I put a question mark at the end.
Yeah, perfect. So that's hard for someone else to guess, but they could trick you into...
Somebody told me at the Apple Store, if you want to do that, put one of those strange symbols at the end. And so I thought to myself, okay, so I put a question mark at the end. If they get that, they'll never guess the question mark.
Unless they listen to the show.
Right, unless they listen to the show because you just told everyone.
Yeah, but I didn't tell you what the password was.
Right,
yeah.
That's right. Well, all right, thank you, Linda.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, a lot of times that is recommended. You want to make your password complex so that other people can't guess it. But then the problem becomes it's too complex for you to remember, so you write it down somewhere. So that's why password managers are very popular, like 1Password or LastPass. Apple has their iCloud keychain service between Apple devices. So in the web browser and then in your iDevices, it will suggest long random passwords that you have no hope of remembering and then save it for you. So all you have to remember is your 1 master password.
Right. All right. Jerry keeps muting me, and nobody can hear us at all, I think, when he does that.
How can he mute you?
I don't know how he can mute
me.
Well,
because he's Jerry, and he knows.
Because he's Jerry.
He owns, yeah.
That's the man.
Yeah,
he knows
the internet. Yeah.
He knows.
Jerry owns the internet. We know that. But this is clearly still not working, so until I can come in here one night and test it, he just left. I think I insulted him. I'm gonna turn this off. We're gonna stop broadcasting. Sorry, until I can fix this and make it work.
So we are
There's
still
no
on
point in it.
We are still on the Ustream broadcast.
Right.
So soundbites.org, and there's a watch. If I can find the right key here, there's a live Ustream video link down on the right that will jump
under you, fascinating stuff.
Yep, that will jump you to the Ustream video. Which is also available for people to watch.
All right, our next...
And that's also being recorded, so you can watch it later.
Right, exactly. All right, our next caller is Doug from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Doug. What's up?
Well, you know, being old school, I grew up with Windows apps, which pretty much exited from memory when you said exit, assuming they were well-behaved. But now I want to talk about the little computer in my hand, the cell phone.
Right.
Is it... illegal or something for developers to create apps which actually exit? Because I'll find apps still running in the background that aren't necessary, like maps or things like that, scanner apps, that type of thing, where when you're done with them, you're really done with them.
It's a convenience
that if you go back into them, they can launch faster. And that's based on the limited performance and memory that smartphones typically have. So they all stay sort of dormant rather than quitting. And all the smartphones and tablets have ways to actually quit the apps if you really want to.
Who's your cell phone? Is it Android or is it iOS?
It's an Android. And I look at reviews of apps, and a lot of people complain about this, and the developers will come back and say, well, we're working on that. If enough people ask, we'll put in an actual quit function. And I can't believe it.
You can quit them yourself if you want to. If you have a new, how new is your cell phone?
How new? It's about a year and a half. It's a Motorola Razr Max.
Okay, then you should have several buttons across the bottom. One is a back button, one is a home button, and the other one probably looks like two squares.
Mm-hmm.
If you click that, you'll see a list of all the running apps.
Right, but if you go to that feature, you always get a warning about bad things that might happen, which I'm not an Android programmer, but I wonder, what are they really warning us about unless we quit something that really is necessary, like
I think you're somewhere else. This is right from the home screen.
Mm-hmm.
Those three buttons across the bottom.
Yeah.
The one on the right should just bring up a list of a set of icons, mm-hmm. which are the running programs.
Yes.
If you just swipe one of those off the screen, it actually stops running.
No kidding. All this time I've been looking at that and didn't know what it did. Okay.
Yeah, that's exactly what it does.
There's no way to automatically stop it.
No, not that I know of, but once you're done, one of the things that I tend to do on my tablet is the way I switch from one thing to the next is I bring up that list and then swipe the thing that I'm done with and then hit the thing that I want to do next.
Yep. It's the same thing on iOS with iPhones and iPads. All of the apps stay dormant in the background waiting for you to activate them again. Some apps are written with multitasking abilities. So, like Skype will wait in the background alive waiting for a call to come in and drain your battery. So actually, Skype does have a preference on iOS, and I'm assuming Android too, that when you close the Skype program, it does quit, so it won't drain your battery waiting for calls to come in.
Mm-hmm.
But that's on an app-by-app basis.
Yeah.
So that's one of the common troubleshootings on all the tablets is if something isn't working right. Usually with a computer, you just say reboot. That's not enough on a smartphone because the apps don't quit. When you reboot, they all come back to where they were from a saved memory state. So you have to quit all your apps manually and then reboot as a troubleshooting tip.
Gotcha. Yeah, usually I find every couple of days I just shut the phone down for a couple of minutes and start it up again because if I run enough apps in that period of time,
yep.
they're all running in the background, and I downloaded something that shows me memory available and, similar to the task manager in Windows, and the thing's all clogged up. There's nothing left unless they reboot the phone. So,
yep.
Anyway, all right. Thanks for the information.
Sure.
There you go, Doug. Have fun.
Actually, Apple made a change in iOS 7, so when you go in your task switcher, it's nice big icons, and they're live, and you can actually see what's happening while you're looking at them. And then to quit them is the same thing. You swipe up. Here's one I can quit. And so I swipe up and it quits. But because they're bigger, there's few of them on screen, so it takes longer to quit them all.
Right.
When you really do want to quit them all.
Right. Whereas with the phone...
When there were smaller icons, they were easier to quit.
Right. With the phone, if you click that little double box... oh, dear. I don't know what I just did. Okay. If you click that little box, you see what's running... And just
the same interface, except you swipe sideways and on iOS,
either side, actually, left or right.
And it's amazing what you see in there.
Yeah, stuff you did 4 days ago.
Yeah, it's still there, yeah. And we see some of the same things happening on the Mac, that when you click the close button of a window, it doesn't necessarily close the application. It just closes that window.
Right.
And so, especially novice users, will close Windows and leave the apps running. And so, they're complaining their computer's so slow. It's because you got 100 apps running. And the Mac OS will relaunch all those apps back for you when you reboot the computer as a convenience.
Right.
Unless you turn that off.
Right. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes, 40 minutes after the hour. You can join in the fun by giving us a call, 966-5299, or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 45 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And I want to give a big shout out to all the people who can't hear us at the Lilac Festival. Today I just realized what's the point of that. Nobody can hear us. Back to the what?
Well, I was going to say, before we get wrapped up in that, we should, again, for all the women that do listen to the program,
right,
wish them a happy Mother's Day.
Yep, happy Mother's Day.
Because we do have quite a few females out there, even though, you know, it's hard to believe that, you know, so many guys call in. We do have quite a few women. You know, Linda called in, and a lot of women out there. Wish them a happy Mother's Day and hope they have a good one. It's supposed to be a nice day, so.
It's supposed to be a nice day tomorrow.
Yeah.
Today's the day. The Lilac Festival is going on. Summer at the market, so all the flowers and stuff are there. So if you're looking to pick up, I don't think the flats are out yet, but the pots are out and the individual flowers are out. There's at the market. So.
We apparently broke a Guinness record of the world's largest human flower.
Yeah.
But there's no picture of it.
No, that would make more sense. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dennis.
Yes, first off, I'm very happy to be a member and lucky that you guys are there because I can't get some of my answers on the Internet. And this is for Steve, iPhone 4S with OS 7. I use the Apple Maps, but I notice when I go into Recents on my map, periodically I have to delete things that I've never even added to my maps, any kind of address, names, business names or whatever. Why is that there, and how do I keep it from happening?
I think it also pulls addresses from your address book and your contacts. In case you wanted to map something in your contacts, you can.
It appears that it's coming when I do surfing on the web sometimes. It appears that some of that is coming from whenever I use Safari.
Yeah. What I've also seen happen is, like, you go to a company website, and somewhere on that page they have a link to a map, and I think Safari is grabbing that for you as a convenience.
Yep.
I've also seen... one of the features they have, do you have a Mac desktop also?
No.
Okay. There is a feature in OS 10.9 on the Mac that when you look up an address on your Mac, it will send it to your iDevice. So even though you didn't look up that address on the iDevice, it will show up there if you want it to.
Yeah, this is my only Apple device. And the thing that annoys me is when I do go to use the map for directions or whatever, all these other things come up and I have to deal with them. Which I don't like. I just want to be able to punch in where I want to go and not have to deal with all these miscellaneous things that come up that I don't even know anything about.
Yeah, it's trying to be convenient for you by grabbing addresses it thinks you might want sometime.
Even though it's like 400 miles away or something.
Yeah, it found an address and is using it.
Okay.
So you can hit that clear history in the history menu in Maps.
I do that almost every day. I have to do that.
Yeah, let me see if there's a way to keep it clear without...
There's no way of keeping the stuff from going in there in the first place, huh?
You can, let me think, under privacy, you might be able to have it not access your address book, but then when you do want to map an address that you have...
Well, I really don't even have an address book on the phone. I really don't have any addresses on the phone.
Well, check the contacts app and see if any of them are in there, because it can read your email and pick up email addresses from what it calls its recent recipients.
Oh, that could be that could be happening also when I access my email. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
There's no map isn't listed under privacy, so it's not in there.
Well, just a thought.
Yeah,
I'd like to. It would be nice if I could keep it from happening and not having to go into it every day and delete all recents, but
because that's what I'm finding online is just instructions on how to clear it, not how to keep it clear.
Okay, well, it was worth a shot.
Yep, maybe someone else listening knows and can put it up for us.
That would be great. Thank you.
Yep.
Bye. All right, thanks.
Yeah, it's always that trade-off between convenience and annoyance. You know, for some people, it's convenient that it remembers any address they ever looked up or
right.
any address on any website they ever went to. But I have seen that on my maps now and then. When I want to go somewhere, it'll pick the wrong city.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it finds Main Street, you know, somewhere else, not Main Street Rochester.
Well, as you know, Google Now will actually show you how long it is till your next appointment.
Mm-hmm.
What's a little spooky is if I look something up, suddenly I get a notice that says you're 15 minutes away from blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. There is, yeah, location services. So you can turn location services off for other apps so like your web browser, if you don't want your web browser to know your location, then it can't look that stuff up.
Well, that's different though from pulling addresses you've looked up from your browser.
From your content, yeah.
All right, our next caller is Sam from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Sam. What's up?
Thanks, guys, for taking my call. On Google Drive, when I open up a file, the window, the main window gets frosted, and I get a little rectangular box saying there was a problem, read only error, exception 9, and I don't know where to clear it.
Generally, if you just click somewhere in the frosted area, it will go away. Do you see this all the time?
Yes, on every file on Google Drive.
There was an error, but it doesn't tell you what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
It says read-only error, DOM, IDBD database, exception 9.
I'm sorry, read that to me again.
It says read-only-error. Then it's got the DOM, IDBD database. Exception 9.
Okay, that's interesting. There is a... Wow, there is an IDBD database, and there are various exceptions in that database. I know about 8, but I did not know about 9. Wow. Basically, there's this indexed database of all the stuff in your drive, and it looks like that's gotten corrupted. I'm not sure off the top of my head how you re-index things. That's a very good question. I don't have an answer for you off the top of my head. I'm sorry, I just don't.
Okay, no problem. No, I appreciate the input.
What app did you say it was in?
I'm sorry, what?
What application are you running when this happens?
Google Drive.
Google Drive. Uninstall and reinstall? Didn't they just split
Is this on the web when you just go on the web page?
Yeah, Gmail. I get Gmail, then I punch up Drive, Google Drive.
Right. Is this happening with photos or with documents?
Documents. Files, documents. Mm-hmm. All my business stuff.
Yeah. Okay. Then I don't know how to do that off the top of my head. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Disconnect from Google Drive and reconnect. But how do you how do you disconnect?
Do you have Google Desktop?
Yes.
Okay.
Maybe it's the link between the web and the desktop?
Yeah. There's that circular Google Drive icon. Do you know the one I'm talking about? There's the Google Drive icon.
In your taskbar.
Okay.
Right.
When you punch up Google Chrome. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, no, if you've got Google Desktop, on the desktop there is a
icon?
An icon for Google Drive.
Oh, yes, I see that. Yes, okay.
All right. And what you can do is if you right-click, it should be in the lower right corner of the screen, I think. If you right-click it, there's an indexing option.
I right-clicked it, and I don't see nothing there that says index. I got down the bottom, the open folder location, including the library. In the bottom, it's got properties. The rest is all cut, shortcuts, cut and copy, and delete.
I don't know that you're in the right place.
Yeah, not on the Google Drive folder, on the Google Drive icon in your taskbar.
You said you have Google Desktop.
Yes.
All right. Is it running?
Yes, but it's only. But on my taskbar, I only got Google Chrome.
No, not on the taskbar. In the lower right corner.
Lower right corner of the screen, above where the taskbar is.
Well, it should be in with the by the clock, all of that stuff.
When I punch up that, tray. I got Chrome, I got Media, I got Graphics, Magic Jack, Speakers, McAfee, and Google Chrome. I got.
All right, then you're not running Google Desktop.
Okay, then I'm confused on your terminology. Then
no, it's okay. There is an actual program called Google Desktop.
Oh, okay.
It's a special utility, and it does a couple of interesting things, but
it's a different program from Google Drive.
Oh, okay. All right. No, I don't. I just got Google. All I got is Google Drive because I connected it when Gmail just say, "Would you like to connect to Google Drive?" And I incorporated that with Gmail.
Right.
I didn't realize there's such a thing as Google Desktop.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. Yes. All right, here's you can index your drive. No, I don't know off the top of my head, and I am sorry.
Okay, all right.
I am sorry. We'll look into it.
Settings either.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll look into it, but I don't have an answer for you right away.
Okay. What's your opinion on Bitcoin?
Don't do it.
It's an interesting technology. It tends to be, well, the most recent public awareness was the Silk Road criminal ring were using Bitcoin as their monetary transfer because it's less traceable than U.S. dollars. It's one of those iffy things where it's probably okay if you it's like the stock market. If you don't mind losing the money, go ahead and try it. Assume you're going to lose the money, and if that doesn't bother you,
yeah.
Right. The SEC right now is saying, don't trust Bitcoin because there's nothing behind it.
Oh, okay.
You know, there's no actual thing behind it.
Yeah,
they can be gone tomorrow, and you're going to be out.
Mount Gox was it Mount Gox or the other one?
No, Mount Gox.
Mount Gox was one of the big Bitcoin exchanges where you could exchange Bitcoins for U.S. dollars and euros and other currency. They went bankrupt, and anyone who had money in their service is basically out of luck.
Right. Wow. It's not like the FDIC where you insured up to $40,000 or whatever.
If you ever read your money, it's backed by the good faith of the United States government.
Right.
So okay. we are agreeing that this green piece of paper is worth this value.
And that's how all money works. Everybody agrees that this piece of paper is worth X dollars, which you can trade for X work and et cetera, et cetera.
That's a lot easier than carrying physical gold and silver in your pocket.
Right, but there's none of that with Mt. Gox, which, by the way, stands for Magic the Gathering Online Exchange. What Mt. Gox stands for. All right, we got to take a break.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 59 minutes after the hour. You've wasted a whole hour with this nonsense. But we're going to be doing it again on the other side of this hour. So stay tuned. Stay with us. Give us a call. The numbers are 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And we will see you very shortly with a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Welcome to the second hour of the longest-running show in the known universe. We have Kevin from Greece, New York on the line. Welcome, Kevin. What's up?
Hi. I'm having a problem with outgoing email. I think I've done all the settings correctly. I'm using Thunderbird. I'm trying to connect to Frontier. I've talked to Frontier tech support a couple of times. When incoming email comes in just fine, and the pop setting apparently is correct, I can get email. But when I send an email out, this is a new laptop, Win 7, and I'm using whatever version, recent version, let's see, Thunderbird 24.5. The sending a message failed. The message cannot be sent because the connection to SMTP server, smtp.frontier.com, timed out. Try again or contact your network administrator. And they said all the settings are correct. They really couldn't fix the problem.
Do you have SSL on or off?
I think the most recent thing was I think I did try to turn SSL on. Let me see.
Try turning it off, see what happens.
Edit. SSL, connection security, SSL/TLS.
And does it say what port it's on?
Well, right now I'm trying port number 465. There's been various iterations that have said port 25.
25 is the standard port.
Yeah, I was going to say that's the Canon one.
But some services, Frontier the biggest one, will block port 25 unless you're using the Frontier server, which you are, so that should be okay.
Yeah, yeah. Right. I mean, like I said, I most recently just tried 465 because I found that on the internet somewhere. I think there was a list from AT&T on the Yahoo website.
Yeah. Because
you know, Frontier, their webmail goes through Yahoo now, so.
If you're using SSL, okay. If you have SSL turned on, the outgoing mail server is 465.
And
And the incoming is 995.
Okay, all right.
And you also need to turn on password authentication for outgoing mail.
Right, and your username is your full email address.
Correct. I've got that in here in Thunderbird. I put that in, username, the full email, and password transmitted insecurely. Does that make a difference? And then
well, no, it should be if you've turned on SSL, it should all be secure.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So 465, turn SS. So you would say SSL should be turned on, and I probably should be using 465.
No, outgoing should be using 465. Incoming should be using 995 if you're going to do that securely as well.
Yeah, okay. Again, the incoming, they're coming in just fine.
Yeah, and because incoming and outgoing use two different servers, each with their own settings,
right.
That can easily happen.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, okay. And then connection security in Thunderbird.
SSL?
SSL. Okay. All right. Well, we'll try that. All right.
Yeah, give it a try. Let us know.
Yeah, let us know. That'd be interesting, too.
Yep. Thanks.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. That's one of the things that a lot of people are going to web-based mail now, the web-based mail system, because it's just, it's so much easier.
It's easier. Less hassles of maintaining, you know.
It depends on your client. Roadrunner's webmail client is horrible, really slow and clunky. And now that Frontier shifted over to Yahoo for their back-end mail provider, you have to deal with all the ads on the Yahoo webpage.
That's true.
Yeah, so, I like the Google.
More and more people are using Google now. It's clean, it's empty, there's nothing there but your mail.
Yeah,
right. I use Google, and I also use Thunderbird, which, by the way, now connects to Google instantly. I mean, you just tell it it's a Google address, and pff, you're done.
Yep.
But I like Thunderbird, and I don't use it for my Frontier mail. I'm forwarding all my Frontier mail to Google.
In fact, one of the tricks we found with Frontier Mail Service, trying to get it configured on your computer and your iPad, is tell the mail program it's a Yahoo account.
Right.
And then put in your Frontier address, because the auto mail setup configuration looks up at server addresses and fills all that in for you. And if you tell it Yahoo, then it uses all the right Yahoo addresses and enables push mail. So you don't have to tell your computer to get mail. It when mail comes into the server, it just pushes it to you.
Yep. Nice tip. Nice tip.
And a couple of weeks ago, someone had mentioned that Roadrunner supports IMAP, so you can synchronize your mail between your computer and your tablet.
Yep.
Turns out that Time Warner supports IMAP at mail.twc.com. Roadrunner does not support IMAP. They only have a POP server.
Ah.
So if you change your server settings, so if you're a Roadrunner customer, you change your server settings to mail.twc.com and use your Roadrunner address, IMAP will work.
Interesting. I don't use anything but IMAP anymore because I get my mail in so many places, but I also send it all through Gmail. I just forward all my other things to Gmail.
And that's so common now to use IMAP so you can synchronize your mail. You read a message on your phone and delete it. It never comes into your computer.
Right, right.
And you delete all the spam on your phone, you never see it on your computer.
Right. That's IMAP. All right. I got to read this news item. The iPhone lock screen has never been completely secure. Nobody's has on any device. Past exploit allowed random people to access your photos or make calls with a few choreographed swipes. The latest, however, can grant access to your full contact list through Siri and let a stranger call, text, or email anyone they want from your number. Discovered by Egyptian neurosurgeon and part-time hacker Sharif Hashim, there's got to be a TV series in this. Egyptian neurosurgeon and part-time hacker Sharif Hashim, this vulnerability affects any iPhone running iOS 7.1.1 that has Siri enabled on the lock screen, which is the default setting. To skirt around the lock screen, all you have to do is pull up Siri and give her a simple verb like call, text, or email. Siri will ask you whom you want to call, and you can manually type in a single letter. This will prompt Siri to ask you to clarify, and will also give you an other option that will open up the iPhone user's entire contact list. You're simply tricking Siri into doing what you want. Hashim posted a video of this trick showing the process at work on an iPhone 5S. Anyone is easily able to replicate the exploit with an iPhone 5, and there's no reason to believe this wouldn't work on an iPhone 4 or an iPad that's running the same version of iOS. It takes a little bit of finesse for a stranger to get to the stage where he can email, text, or call anyone in your contact list, but not much. The intruder needs to know what he's looking for, though that's not too hard once he gets past the lock screen, sees the whole list. Once the intruder finds, say, your boss's name on the list, he can easily send a disparaging text message or a resignation email. He can even trick Siri into sharing the contact information for future reference. Your boss should have no idea, would have no idea, that it wasn't you. In the meantime, the best fix is just to disable Siri on the lock screen if you're paranoid. From there, all you have to do is just wait for the next version of iOS. Here's the deal. First, do you have Siri on your lock screens? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Just disabling Siri from the lock screen is all you have to do to protect yourself. And, of course, this is assuming that other people have access to your phone. But nowadays, we leave our phones just sitting on desks. People pick them up to look at them. You think, no big deal, because the lock screen is on. Well, it's not going to be anything that saves you anymore. I have a friend whose entire phone got erased by her 2-year-old daughter. The kid picked up the phone, you know, kids. Kids, man, they take...
Oh, they love to push buttons.
They love that stuff. She got her hands on it, and the mom was looking and thought, ha, that's pretty cute. The next time the mom picked it up, it was a clean phone. It was wiped. Everything was gone.
Sweet.
Because one of the safeguards is if you enter the passcode wrong too many times, it erases the phone.
Right. No, she didn't have a passcode on it. Somewhere the kid got into the...
It takes three or four. Are you sure you want to erase the phone? Then are you really sure you want to erase the phone?
Well, the kid was really, really sure. Really sure. You know, 2-year-olds are very positive about many things.
They don't waver too much. They're right down. No gray area. It's either one or the other.
Yep. I suggested that she do what I did, is I had, when my daughter was very young, my old phone, I put a few kid games on it and gave it to her.
Yep.
And so she could play the, you know, I disabled it as a phone. It no longer made phone calls. So it turned into what I always call my iPod, and she could play a few games on it, and listen to music. And she figured out, you know, I showed her once and it was done. But she never had to worry about anything else after that. I didn't have to worry because she didn't have her hands on my phone. My phone didn't have her games. So she was not that interested in my phone. She was interested in her phone.
Yeah.
She remembered to plug it in every night, all of that stuff. You know, she had it knocked. She was pretty good at that stuff, I got to say. And kids in general are. They know how that stuff works. All they have to do is be told once and they're done. It's that simple. They're amazing at that kind of thing. Unlike the rest of us, we have to be told. Now, what was it? 8 or 9 times.
Yeah, I was
going
to say several times before it finally sinks in and, oh, yeah, I remember that now.
Yep.
CRS.
Exactly. Kraft. Got to take another call. That's Steve from Greece, New York. Welcome, Steve. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys.
What can we do for you, Steve? Steve?
Sorry about that. I have a question on Windows XP and the government. There's been articles out there. You guys still there?
Yeah, yep. Go ahead.
Okay. There's been articles out there that the IRS and other government agencies still are using XP on their machines and have paid Microsoft to continue updates.
Yep.
Do you know if that's true?
Yes, as far as I know.
Then as a government, since we pay the government, why don't we have access to those updates that our government is paying to have Microsoft do?
Well, I'm not entirely certain that that's a question you ask Microsoft. I believe that's the government. I believe that's a question you ask Microsoft. Microsoft charges people for tech support per machine. So the government may indeed be paying Microsoft, but they're not paying them for a blanket fix. They're paying them for a fix per machine, and they have designated X number of machines. If they wanted to add another million or two or five machines, they would have to pay a million or two or five more dollars, whatever, $150.
Whatever they're being charged, right.
So the government, we're presuming, I guess, that they're not doing like they used to do with the updates for the government machine. They're just doing individual machines like under a contract.
Right, exactly. Probably, yeah. Exactly. That's and Microsoft has said that. This is a contract with the United States government. They have a similar contract.
I bet there's separate contracts with separate prices for each department.
Probably.
In the government that wants this to happen, yeah.
They are doing the same thing with many of the banks because many of the ATM machines run XP.
Right, and yeah, I've heard that too. One more quick XP question, and I'll let you go. I love this show, by the way. Guys.
Thank you.
I know that any XP machine is extremely vulnerable not to use it, but I still got one that I use. My question is, if that XP phone is never online while any of my other computers are online, are my other computers still in danger via the XP machine?
Yes and no.
It depends on what you get and whether it travels across the network and whether you're sharing those other machines on that network.
What
I'm trying to say is, when I use the XP machine, no other machine is online.
Yeah, but that doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. As long as the XP machine is online, you are vulnerable.
Yeah, if you
listening. What
and even if the XP
is,
machine is not online, you can be vulnerable by a document that comes into that XP machine.
Right. What he's saying is, can he be infected through the XP machine to the other machine? That only will happen if you are sharing data or the machines are online at the same time.
Right.
However, do you really want to predicate your security for your entire network on whether you remember to turn off the XP machine first?
It's a legitimate question and one that's been thought. There's
It's a tough question. I don't expect you to answer it here. But the serious answer is stop using XP. And you know that's the answer, which is why you're fighting so hard against it. You know that's the answer, don't you?
All right, thanks a lot, guys.
All right, thanks.
Yep, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. A sizable coalition of technology companies has taken a stand in favor of net neutrality in the form of a letter to the Federal Communications Commission. The group, led by giants including alphabetically Amazon, eBay, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, Netflix, Twitter, and Yahoo, challenges a proposal the FCC is considering that threatens net neutrality. While the letter does not explicitly mention a course of action, like calling on the FCC to regulate internet service providers as utilities, the coalition strongly espouses the benefits of an open internet. The commission's longstanding commitment and actions undertaken to protect the open internet are a central reason why the internet remains an engine of entrepreneurship and economic growth, the group writes. This commission should take the necessary steps to ensure that the internet remains an open platform for speech and commerce so that America continues to lead the world in technology markets. The letter marks one of the first times some influential tech companies like Amazon have formally expressed a stance on net neutrality regulations since news of the FCC proposal broke on April 23rd. For those of you who don't remember, the FCC proposal is that if a company wants a fast internet speed, they should pay all the other internet service providers for that, as opposed to everybody just should be able to use the internet for free. Netflix, by the way, is actually paying a couple of people.
And not just their own provider, other providers.
Right, that's right. And that's part of why that extra dollar is being tacked on.
So if you're using Frontier Telephone, you should also pay AT&T and you should also pay Verizon to use your Frontier Telephone.
Right. So
because if you call somebody, it may go to an AT&T.
Right. And so people are saying, well, this makes us all pay twice and blah, 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 blah. But it's an uphill climb for public approval. And who knows what's going to happen. Don't forget, the guy who runs the FCC used to lobby for all the internet service providers. So he's not really on your side. Anyway, what are your thoughts? I don't even want to ask this. What are your thoughts about net neutrality? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. And keep it clean.
I still have an issue that here are third world countries.
Oh, yeah.
Third world countries get faster speed and it's cheaper.
Yep.
I was on a forum the other day on Google Plus talking about some stuff, and one guy was talking about how terribly slow the website was, and another guy says, well, it's fast for me, but then I'm on an 8 gigabit connection in my home. I'm in South Korea. We've all got this.
Yeah. I hear that on a lot of the podcasts I listen to. One of the guys travels all over the world, shooting video, and he talks, I was in the crappy hotel internet, and I only got 100 megabit.
Yeah.
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 Well, come on back to the U.S., and you can be drawn back down to a snail's crawl.
Well, that's why we're delighted to have people like Greenlight Networks, who are bringing fiber. Google, who is bringing fiber, not to us.
Of course not.
But it's people like that who are hopefully bringing us a much faster and much better regulated internet connection that will be both inexpensive and very fast.
Well, that's what you wish they could do, is do it by volume, because too many of them are greed. Let's face it.
Well, here's the problem.
I don't have any problem with people getting rich, but you know what?
The problem is most of these companies are run by people who were in charge back in the day when you paid for everything. And now they're looking at a model that's flat fee pricing, and they don't like it. They don't like it. It's the same issue with the IRS. Why don't we have a flat internet tax? Because nobody likes it, because they're used to paying and that dribs and drabs kind of way. Well,
and that's what the cable companies are trying to do for internet services, that you're used to paying for the amount of water you use, and you're used to paying for the amount of electricity you use. You should start paying for the amount of internet you use. And then they always point out that, well, somebody who watches a lot of movies should pay more than you who only looks at their email. No.
Yeah, really.
It should be free and open.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and that's what these companies like Amazon and Google and Yahoo and all those are saying. What they're saying is, look, the internet is not that connection to the internet is what's driving the economy these days.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to encourage new startup companies, you can't start charging them the way you want to, because they will not be able to compete.
Right. You'll kill them before it even gets started.
Yep. All right. Our friend Joe from Cheektowaga.
Towaga.
You got it. What's up, Joe?
Well, I from what I understand, Netflix was asking for basically a free co-location in Comcast's data center. And that's why they had to pay extra in their griping about it. Maybe I misunderstood what was reported, but in order to serve Comcast customers better, they decided, well, let's put our content directly in their data center so that they can serve it out over their network instead of having to rely on some sort of interconnect.
Maybe that's what they settled on.
I don't know what to think. I agree with you. I don't want to have to pay a Netflix access fee to Comcast or Time Warner or anybody else for that matter. But
right. No, the original thing was...
Where you...
I'm sorry, go ahead. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say... perhaps everybody who subscribes to Netflix is going to have their price increased.
They did.
I thought I read something this morning.
Yeah, Netflix price went up a buck.
Yep. Here's the deal. The original thing, as I understand it, now what happened later is different. The original thing, as I understand it, is that Comcast decided that Netflix was using too much of their bandwidth. What really it was, of course, is that Netflix was giving out content that wasn't coming over Comcast cable. Because Comcast owns cable system as well. And so what they decided was that in order to force people away from, I'm paraphrasing, of course, to force people away from Netflix and back to Comcast's own programming, they wanted to raise the price that would cost to get Netflix to come in. They want compensation for content they don't control coming over their network. That's where it started.
Oh,
now, where it
I
went
think
after
that's
that.
Definitely true. It's basically a conflict of interest for them. I mean, let's just say a hypothetical example of Showtime. They carry Showtime over their video portion of their network. And maybe some of the programs that are available on Showtime are also available from a video streamer such as Netflix.
Right.
So, gee, which can I extort more money out of our customers for making it difficult for Netflix to do their thing? Or, gee, I have this cash cow here of getting the video from the subscribers, the video money, I should say. And we're paying some of that to Showtime.
Right. And if we can get paid twice,
mess there.
Yeah, if we can get paid twice, that's even better. We'll get paid by Showtime, and we'll get paid by Netflix.
Right. No, it goes the other way. They pay Showtime.
But I also understand from Comcast's perspective that most peering arrangements are equal exchange of traffic, and if Netflix is providing more downstream.
No, there's no such thing as equal exchange of traffic. They can't guarantee that. What they're saying is we will assume there will be, over time, something approaching parity. And because of that...
Oh, we would certainly hope, yeah.
Right? I mean, they can't say, we sent you 7 gigabits, so you have to send us back 7 gigabits. It's just not going to work that way. It's never going to work that way. So what they're doing is they're saying, we will simply open it up because over time, it'll pretty well equal out.
And what may have happened is that when Comcast said, Netflix, you have to pay us, they may have ended up saying, okay, but then we'll put a mirror server inside your inside your location to make it better for our customers. As long as we have to pay anyway, let's put a computer in your server center.
I would also say, unfortunately, for your person in Pennsylvania that couldn't play the stream, I took a look at what was happening. You're too darn popular. It said that the IceCast was not allowing any more stream connections.
Yeah, we've been watching that on our server here. The streaming server will go down as we. It's right now. There's 97 people connected. I think it had 100 limit.
Yeah.
And instead of failing gracefully with an error message saying there's too many people connected, it just dies and won't connect at all.
But I think the number of people who are already connected are still connected.
Yeah. It just nobody new could connect.
Nobody new can connect.
Yeah, I certainly am.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no way the transmitter is going to make it all the way out here at Cheektowaga. So, yes, I am streaming. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
I'd also kind of want to touch on the Android problem your caller was having before.
Well, before you do that, hold on. Before you do that, let me just point out that increasing the stream for us will cost money, and that's why we have the
pledge drive.
Pledge drive.
Oh yeah,
a couple
of
times a year.
Pledge drives.
Okay, go ahead. I just had to get in the pledge drive.
Oh yeah,
thank you.
Oh yeah, most certainly. It's like a certain national radio host says. You put up a transmitter. It doesn't cost anything extra to add 1,000 more users. Listening to your broadcast,
right.
you do that for streaming. Unfortunately, the costs just don't work out that way, and you know, an additional 100 users is X number of dollars.
And that brings us right back to your bandwidth as well, right? And that brings you back to your bandwidth as well. So you add another 100 users, you got to increase your bandwidth to connect to it, and that's even more money. So you had one more thing you wanted to say?
Oh yes. Unfortunately, when you look at the recent apps list and you swipe one away, that doesn't actually close it. That just takes it out of the MRU list. And the caller was kind of getting two steps ahead of you when what you can do on that most recently used list is long press on it, and one of the items that will come up is app info. That will take you right to the settings app into the for that particular application, and then you tap on force stop, and that's where it warns you, oh, you might really harm this program. I'll say this much. I have yet to have an incident where I force closed something and it actually harmed the program. It's kind of like the idea of yanking the power cord out of the wall for your computer. Yeah, a lot of times nothing happens, but there's those times that, yeah, you really damaged something.
Right, and what I didn't get to talk about is there are programs like Task Killers, but they're not always a good thing.
It's a last resort.
Right, right.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, all right. Thanks.
I have to do that sometimes. Like for example, my Roku remote control that times sometimes screws up synchronizing with my Roku, so I actually have to kill that and restart it. And there's no exit function on that either, unfortunately.
Right, right, right. Right. All right, thanks.
All right, thank you for your time, gentlemen.
All right. Thanks, have fun.
And it's all those crazy...
I thought there was somebody else waiting.
It's all those crazy issues that make...
I don't know why I thought that, but I did.
Yeah, all those crazy issues that
in time.
Is the problem. We want everything as cheap and as best as we can, and... The people who create it need to get paid for their
you know, paid a reasonable fee for their work, and that's always the description. It's it's about $30,000 a day for cleaning viruses. That's reasonable to me.
That's reasonable. it depends on which side of that $30,000 you're on. I'll take it any day of the week. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Brian from Rochester, New York on the line. Welcome, Brian. What's up?
Oh, not much, guys. You having a good time?
Oh, this is about the most fun you can have without smiling.
Yeah, well, you never do. it's a question really for you, Nick, because you wrote it.
Did I?
Yeah, the Windows Waltz.
Yeah.
When you update all the programs, you know, RD colon, RTDSS and killer and all like that, and then you go to safe mode, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Is it all right to just boot into safe mode with networking, or is it better not to do that? Because sometimes it appears that, like, a VAST or something want to be connected while they're running.
Because they want to check for updates.
Yeah, they want to do the updates. Right. But for the most part, I wouldn't.
I would start not.
You're right.
Because the point here is, if the network is not running, then any bad stuff that might be running in the background can't call out.
Mm-hmm.
My suggestion is you run it in safe mode without networking, and then when you reboot into regular, then it'll update. You can, if you want to, run that stuff again, all the stuff that wants to connect.
Yeah.
And then you've a little bit of a double whammy there.
Because what's happening is, see, a lot of these root kits and that are getting smart, that they know a lot of folks are, you know, rebooting and rebooting in safe mode. Well, it also will check to see if it's safe mode with networking. So even though, for the most part, safe mode is bare minimum. I mean, your graphic drivers, everything, aren't loaded, you know, and it's a plain vanilla system.
Yep.
Well, like I say, the rootkit folks are getting very sneaky, and they're learning, since you're going to go that way, we'll still get at you. And go out and get stuff while you're sitting there thinking you're all safe and getting rid of stuff.
Getting rid of stuff, right.
You
right.
got it.
Well, I just figured I'd ask.
There you go.
Well, thank you for asking.
Have a good time, guys.
You
Have
too.
Have fun.
Always do.
Bye.
Yeah, it's always interesting to see what happens. Some of the viruses and malware limit themselves to your own computer. Some will look on the network for any shared drives. And sometimes you don't even have to have a drive shared. NetBIOS that lets computers see each other to browse the network. If it can see there's a computer there, it can get back in because there's the invisible shares. What is it? The dollar IPC and the dollar admin that are shared even when sharing is off.
Yeah.
So some of them get really nasty.
Yeah, you got to be careful because, like I say, they're getting clever now.
Yep.
They're finding more creative ways to get into your system to either, one, steal information or be tricky and, like, you know, most scams trying to tell you, oh, yeah, your machine is infected. You should be doing this or doing that. Or we could help speed up your machine. Your machine is really running slow. And, you know, you could get more out of your internet if you put this product on there.
Yep. Yep.
It's all BS.
Yep. All right, back to the phones and back to Dayton, Ohio with Vic. Welcome, Vic. What's up?
Hi there. Yeah, I had a comment about I think the last call, one of the last callers' comment was about Comcast and Netflix. And
right.
I really don't think people have a good understanding of really what the problem is, and I don't understand it in great depth. But the problem is not Comcast. And believe me, I think Comcast is a basically pretty horrible company.
Yeah.
What it has to do with is the what they call the level three providers and beyond. Comcast, as you might realize, only supplies the last mile, that is,
right,
the mile to your house. They have nothing to do with the interconnections between, let's say, the last mile and, let's say, Netflix. There are all these level different level providers. And that's where the problem occurs. What it is, if you're a Netflix or a big volume producer, you're putting out this tremendous amount of data. And there's this equal pairing agreement that, you use a certain amount of gigs. And, yeah, we'll make it up on you use a certain amount of gigs. Well, there is no makeup for Netflix. They just have huge data output. So they had to enter into a peering arrangement. Outside of the normal peering arrangements on the third-level provider status.
Right, because normally what Netflix, they pay their internet provider, and that's all they have to do. So it's like you know, here in town, you know, I pay Roadrunner for my internet, and I don't care where it gets to from the other end. I don't have to pay anybody else it goes through.
Yeah, but see, at third level, they have peering arrangements.
Right, because they have so much data.
There's so much data. But if you're at the other end of the hose of Netflix, there's no way it's going to be equal. There's no data amount of data that's going to come back to Netflix to make that arrangement work. So in the case of Netflix, they had to pay because of this unequal pairing.
Yeah.
And that's what the thing is about. It's not Comcast. It's the third-level providers. I think they use Akamai or someone like that. I forget who exactly.
Right.
Yeah, believe me, Comcast is a horrible company, but this one I don't think you can blame it for. Now, for instance, if you had, say, for instance, an Apple TV box, the problem does not exist. The reason being is Apple TV has paid the third-level fees on their box, and there is no slowing down. But if you're on Comcast or anyone else, there is slowing down. It's because of the third-level providers. That's where the problem is.
Well, yes and no. The third-level providers are also accusing Comcast and some of the other ISPs of deliberately harming broadband service by slowing them.
Because
they want equal pairing. You know, you send out a certain amount of data, yeah, and but when you have high volume output, there's no way you're going to equate a Netflix and come out equal. Their data output, you know, they go not only nationwide, they go to various countries, and their data output is just huge.
Yep.
So what's going to come out from the other end? I mean, how are they going to make up for it? So that's where they slow down.
They are big, but I don't think they're as big as Yahoo.
Oh, yeah, they're bigger.
Are they?
Yeah.
I didn't mean Yahoo. I beg your pardon. I just saw the word Yahoo on my screen.
Okay.
I meant YouTube.
Well, see, now, I don't know what type of pairing arrangements I made the same mistake.
See?
YouTube has made. They might have made alternate pairing arrangements.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, see, I don't know about that. But I know Netflix did not.
Well, and sort of we think what might have prompted all of this is that was it last year or something? One of the study companies said almost 50% of all primetime traffic was Netflix?
Yeah, or more than that. I think it's 70% during the evenings. Varies between time of day.
Yeah.
You know, you get home, turn on your computer, turn on Netflix, watch a movie. Now, who doesn't do that?
Yeah. So I just
it's
found
a huge volume.
Well, I just found a chart from November 2013. And for upstream bandwidth usage, it's BitTorrent at 36%. downstream, Netflix is 31%, YouTube is 18%.
Anyhow, Netflix has entered into a pairing. It's the third-level providers, and they actually are now paying for that service, paying for the loss you know, to bring up the bandwidth that way. I mean, if you're a third-level provider, and people never know about these things, they expect equal parity back and forth. There's no equal with Netflix.
Right, but you do have to understand that Comcast specifically wants to be paid by Netflix directly.
Well, they're not. It's the third-level provider.
No, excuse me.
But it's sort of indirect.
Excuse me. Comcast, in fact, wants to be paid directly by Netflix. That's the latest thing they're doing.
But what they have done, the arrangement, I think, was what the third-level provider. Now, it might have changed. I don't know. I'm not up to date.
No, they actually are being paid by Netflix directly.
Oh, okay. Well, whatever works.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. All right, we got to move on.
Alrighty.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Bye.
And part of the problem in adding to the complication is that many of the internet service providers like Comcast and Time Warner also own TVs and movie. So they make the content, they make the distribution network, and that is a problem. They want their content prioritized. In fact, there was a law 100 years ago that a studio couldn't own a movie theater. Because they didn't want, say, the Sony theater will only play Sony movies and they won't take anybody else's movies. And so there was a law preventing that, and the lobbyists got that taken away now.
Right.
So we now have a Sony theater in Rochester. But it does play other companies' movies. But that's the worry is that if we're on Time Warner Internet, if you watch a Time Warner movie, it will cost less than if you want to watch, a Sony movie. And that's the whole idea of net neutrality. We want the net to be neutral. We want to pay one flat cost, and we don't care where the content is coming from. We just want to see it.
Right. And that's a large part of the issue, because what Comcast is saying is your content doesn't – nobody pays me for your content.
Right.
So you have to pay me for your content.
Right.
And that is directly from Netflix – they are taking money directly from Netflix to not slow them down. And that's kind of, I don't know, that's like the back in the day, the fire insurance that my relatives used to charge people.
That's a nice army base you got here, Governor.
Exactly.
Shame if anything happened to it.
All right, that's it. We're done for another week. I want to thank everyone who called in. I apologize to those of you to whom we did not get. Call in earlier next week. That'll give you the opportunity to get in and talk to us. I want to thank Dave Enright and Steve Ray for putting up with this nonsense all the time. And listen, don't go away, because George is coming in to play the best German music you will hear all week. And Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow, so we're feeling a little better about the whole thing right away.
And don't forget the Apple Cider meeting Wednesday, 7 o'clock at East High School.
Right. And we'll see you back here next week with a whole lot more of Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.